It takes a strong belief and a lot of resolve to become a vegan in America, but perhaps especially so if you're a cattle rancher. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. Renee King Sonnen and her husband Tommy were cattle ranchers in Texas when a relationship with a calf changed everything. King Sonnen stopped eating meat and over time founded a sanctuary for animals. She now speaks out about ending animal agriculture for many environmental reasons, but also because of the cruelties that meat animals are subjected to. King Sonnen named the calf who changed her life Rowdy Girl, and that became the name of the sanctuary. Renee King Sonnen has written a book about her path from cattle rancher to animal advocacy and veganism. The book's title is Rowdy Girl, Confessions of a Vegan Cattle Rancher. I asked her about her former life as a cattle rancher.
That we had a 96-acre cattle ranch, my husband did, and it was a cow-calf operation. And what that is we bred cows so that they would have babies. We did it all naturally. There was no artificial insemination. But, you know, when the baby calves got to be 6 months old or so, they were rounded up in the trailer and sent to auction where they would be bought and sold to the highest bidder to go into either feedlots or another cattle ranch somewhere.
At some point on this cattle ranch, you started looking at the cows not as nameless creatures, but as creatures with feelings. How did that happen?
Well, my husband wanted me to get more involved with the cattle ranch. At that point, whenever we got married, I was a music producer and I had my own band. And I was at the time producing Texas Women in Country Music showcases. And I was selling real estate part-time. And so I didn't really have any desire to help Tommy on the ranch. I never did. I never had any inclination to get out there and, you know, roll up my sleeves and help him mend fences or open gates, any of that. But Tommy had another agenda. He wanted me more involved. So he came home one day and told me about these two baby calves that needed a mama up the road. And he pretty much pulled on my heartstrings because I had never had any kids. I said, "Wow, really?" And he said, "Yeah, they're little two babies. They need bottle fed. And I wanted you to go look at them and see what you thought." So anyway, we went up the road, went and looked at them, and I bought them. One of them was Rowdy Girl. She came bouncing out, you know, with a little white, beautiful little heart on her head, and she was extremely rowdy. And I said, "Well, aren't you a little rowdy girl?" And so that is how Rowdy Girl Sanctuary got its name, is because of the relationship that began developing between me and Rowdy Girl. I bottle fed her at night or in the middle of the day, and I just developed a very close bond with her. And so, but I was a cattle rancher's wife. I wasn't a vegan. I just started having feelings for Rowdy Girl like I would my dog or cat.
Another influence was something you read about carnism, which is a belief system that conditions people to eat certain animals. The term was coined by Dr. Melanie Joy, who's a psychologist, and wrote a book called Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows.
That was the book that, you know, had kind of had my attention when I first went vegan. But back in the day, before I went vegan, I was watching slaughterhouse videos. My relationship with Rowdy Girl had escalated to the point of we were inseparable. You know, I couldn't stand, you know, being, you know, I couldn't stand the thought of, you know, her going to slaughter. Watching these slaughterhouse videos, because I was trying to understand what my husband and I were doing. I was trying to make sense of it because he told me that all the things I was seeing was PETA propaganda.
PETA is an organization called People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
He really thought that it was all PETA propaganda. But you know, it wasn't PETA propaganda. It was really what was happening, the way the animals were being treated in slaughterhouses. I was watching this little short documentary about a family sitting around a kitchen table enjoying beef stew, savoring the taste. And somebody said, "This is so good. What's the recipe?" And the lady of the house said, "Well, I'm so glad you asked. You start off with a pound of very young golden retriever." And so I, as soon as I heard that, because I always loved beef stew, that was one of my favorite meals that my mother made. And so when I heard it could be a baby golden retriever, I got sick to my stomach and I just like my mouth flew open, and so did everybody on the screen. They stopped eating. They were like mortified that they were enjoying beef stew and realizing they were eating a puppy. And then the lady of the house said, "Just kidding, it's really a cow." And nobody could resume eating. That day, when we went to my mother-in-law's house, her name was Effie, and she's since passed away. But me and Tommy were on the way to her house, and all the kids were going to be in there, you know, be there, all the grandkids, my nieces and nephews, and all my in-laws were going to be there. And I walk in, and my mother-in-law comes out with a big old pot of beef stew. And so I had just seen this little documentary, and it couldn't have been timed any better. I really do believe it was divine intervention for me. It was masterfully planned by Mother Earth herself. I believe that. And I, as soon as she brought out the beef stew, I just immediately said, "I can't eat that." She didn't even ask me or anything. She said, "Well, Renee, don't you want a bowl?" I was like, "No." She was like, "Why?" I said, "Because it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in it and I can't eat it." And you know, and I said it very loud, very obnoxious, very panic stricken. And everybody in the room stopped talking and looked at me. My husband was mortified. It was as if I had cussed my mother-in-law out, you know. And all I did was say exactly what it was. And she said, "What did you say?" And I repeated myself in the silence, because it's got floating, dead, hacked up animal bodies in it, and I can't eat it. And she was like, "Oh, well, Renee, you can pick it out." And I was like, "Nope, there ain't no more picking it out for me." So that day, I realized in that moment that something had shifted and that I had gone vegan.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Renee King Sonnen, Executive Director and Founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, author of Rowdy Girl: Confessions of the Vegan Cattle Rancher. How did your change in diet affect your husband?
It seriously affected him. He was not happy about it. I came home on the way home from my mother-in-law's house. It was pretty much dead silence. You know, because he asked me something about what in the world were you thinking, and I was just like, I couldn't even talk about it. I was having so many feelings that I couldn't even put words into it. And I was just, you know, tears were just coming down my eyes. And so as far as how it affected my husband, you know, I became his worst nightmare, because I would not let him have any animal products in the house. And I was calling him a murderer every day. I don't recommend you call people a murderer, but that's what I did. And it was horrible. We were fighting all the time. I mean, I was pretty much keeping him from selling the cows. At that point, I told him, you know, that I didn't want him to sell the cows anymore, that I didn't want to be a part of that. And he was like, "Renee, what are we going to do? This is our living." I just became, you know, really hell-bent on finding, you know, a way out. And the handwriting was on the wall that Tommy and I were going to probably end up in divorce again. We had already been married once. This was our second marriage to each other. And you know, when you have an affair, That's considered like a cardinal sin, but going vegan on your husband is right up there with that. If they're a cattle rancher, he felt like I had betrayed him, and we were fighting like cats and dogs every day.
And then your idea to create an animal sanctuary came fairly soon after the day you went vegan.
Well, the very next day after I went vegan, November 1st, I walked outside and, I'm a very spiritual girl anyway. I have over 1,000 hours of yoga teacher training. I meditate. I start my morning every day with just me and nature, yoga, prayer. I chant in Sanskrit and Gurmukh. So I'm a spiritual girl. I was raised Christian, so I have a lot of Bible verses that I do like, but what happened was I knew on that day, November 1st, when I walked out into the pastures, that I was standing on sacred land, that these cows would never go to slaughter again. I don't know how I knew that. I just knew that they wouldn't. I swore to them that over my dead body, I would never, ever let one of them go to the sale barn again. They would never leave here. I consecrated the place. I got on my knees on the ground in the fog, damp grass. It was very early in the morning, and the cows all surrounded me. Like, what are you doing? They're very curious, cows are. And I had a prayer meeting right there with the cows. And I knew that it was done. It was like the sanctuary was already done before I ever went back in the house, because I had signed, sealed, and delivered it spiritually in my DNA at that point. I knew it. I knew it was done. And so when I went back into the house, I began looking up vegan registries, how to find vegans, because I didn't have any vegan friends except for Rowdy Girl and, and the other cows. And so I stumbled on what was called the Global Vegan Registry on Facebook. And that's where I met my first vegan friend, Jeannie Westfall. And I'll talk about her in the book. She's mentioned a lot because she answered, she was messaging with me whenever I was just at a loss. I was so totally emotionally wrecked, because I realized that I had been eating animals that had feelings just like me. And it became an emotionally challenged, it just became very difficult for me emotionally. I couldn't stop crying when I realized, who I was eating instead of what I was eating. I was very inexperienced, only been vegan one day. And so my friend Jeannie, over a period of 2 or 3 days after I cried and cried and cried and cried, she said, "Renee, you need to tell your story on a blog. Why don't you start a blog on Facebook and tell your story?" Tommy didn't know anything about that blog. He didn't know I had it. I just started amassing a following, and I started getting more courage and more confidence. And Tommy and I were talking one day out in the pasture, because it wasn't working between us. It just wasn't working, We developed a plan on that Facebook page for me to buy my husband's cows from him. And so I did all that on the sly. And so, one day we were out in the pasture and we just started talking, and I said, "Well, Tommy, if you're gonna sell all the cows, if you're thinking about selling all the cows," because that's what he was gonna do, just sell them all and get out of the business. And I was like, "If you're gonna do that, why don't you sell them to me?" He was like, "Sell them to you? What are you talking about?" And I was like, "Well, if you're gonna sell the cows, what would you sell them to me for?" He said, "What are you gonna do with my cows?" I said, "Well, if I could buy them, what would it cost?" And so he played along, and he just said, "Well, okay, I could probably get 40,000 for them, blah, blah, blah. If I was going by my, going to sell them myself, but, and some of them will be pregnant. Some of them, won't get as much because they're older, yada, yada, yada. He said, "You're my wife. I would sell them to you for 30,000." I said, "Okay, you sell them to me for 30, and will you lease me the land for $1 a year if I can buy them?" And so he laughed again, laughed out loud, and I was just, he said, "Yeah, sure, Renee, you can," he didn't no more believe I was going to do this than the man in the moon. If Tommy gives you his word, that's it. And so I went back to my Facebook friends on that Facebook page and said I had a deal. And so we put together the Indiegogo campaign and I started raising the money and I started amassing so many followers, I couldn't believe it, and money started coming in. And it was at that point that I told my husband about the campaign to buy his cows.
And so you did that.
I did that, yeah. In less than 4 months, I raised $36,000 and I bought his cows. And that's and then we became a nonprofit actually in February of 2014.
And that's the sanctuary.
Yeah, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, 501c3, 11 years. We're in our 11th year right now.
And how is the sanctuary funded now?
Well, by donors, by we have members. We have almost 800 members. We have folks that really, believe in us. We get grants. I'm always applying for grants. We get matching grants. We have people that send what's called a DAF. It's a donor advised fund. They donate through, that. We have people that leave us in their will. We are doing something in the world that nobody else ever did. And that's the reason it's so important for this book to get out there, because we are going to be able to get the message into rural America where other vegans are not able to penetrate. That's our goal is, no matter where we are, wherever I'm speaking, our team is going to be doing everything they can to find rural opportunities for me to speak.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Renee King Sonnen, Executive Director and founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary and author of Rowdy Girl, Confessions of a Vegan Cattle Rancher. And then you started the Rancher Advocacy Program. What is that?
I went vegan in 2014, and the Rancher Advocacy Program evolved out of cattle ranchers and their families contacting me organically because our story started going viral on platforms like media platforms like CBS Evening News and ABC, and we were on in Vogue magazine, Bon Appetit. I mean, you name it, we've got hundreds of stories. And so because of that, cattle ranchers and their families began to contact me, not understanding how we were doing this, if they could do it, what could they do, and in the beginning, my whole method, my whole mode of operation when I started thinking about that program was to ethically change hearts and minds, But that's a real tall order. That's the reason we got to get this book into the rural communities. Because to change a cattle rancher, a farmer's way of looking at the world, when they've been, when they've been in generations of this type of lifestyle is not easy. The Rancher Advocacy Program, I had big dreams for it. But unfortunately, everybody that I would talk to, they all wanted to know, well, what are they going to do different? They can't start a sanctuary like I did. They don't know how to fundraise. They don't know how to be out front. I mean, most cattle ranchers are farmers. They don't want to be fundraising, They want to be working the land. And so I started thinking of all these ways that I could help them. And, chicken farm to mushroom farm. Oh my God. Okay, that would be something we could do. Well, we could also, what about wind farms? What about solar farms? I got a call one day about a chicken farmer, cattle rancher that was about to go under. They had gone, they had changed their way of life. They were still cattle ranchers, but they had sold all their chickens. They weren't selling chickens anymore, and they were wanting to figure out a way to transition their chicken farm to a mushroom farm or something else. And but they had no money. Their cows were going to die because they had no food. They had no rent. They couldn't pay their mortgage. They couldn't pay their light bills, nothing. And they were in Arkansas, and I went out there. I drove out there and I started a fundraiser for them while I was there so that they could feed their cows and so they could keep the lights on. I appealed to one of our funders to get money for them so that they could keep their lights on and pay their house note and buy groceries and all that. So that's where it started. I became very attached to these farmers. I really wanted to help them. I worked with them for, gosh, almost 5 years. I was able to acquire quite a bit of funding. We did a pilot program for to transition the chicken house into a mushroom farm, the chicken barn, you know, the 20,000 square foot building. And but the farmers themselves could not make it work. They just and so it became kind of a bottomless pit for money. And so it was obvious that I had, you know, I couldn't just keep doing this because we didn't have government support. You just can't rely on, you can't rely on, you know, private funding for this type of venture. It's just not going to work. The farmers themselves need support. They need help because most of them are indentured servants themselves. They don't know how to make a living, you know, doing anything else other than what they're doing. It's hard for them to imagine, especially when they've been doing it, you know, for generations. And so we still have the Rancher Advocacy Program, but the emphasis is not on getting money for farmers. It's on motivating, inspiring, educating, encouraging them to consider a different way of life. Yeah, and I would help them, you know, do anything I could, but you know, as far as connecting them, because we were the very first rancher. We were the very first farm transition program in the world, and now there's, you know, a few more that started. I know them all, and so anyway, but it's not easy. It's very tough.
You want readers of your book and others to examine their own feelings about using animals as food. Do you think you're being successful in that?
Am I being successful at getting
Other
people to
people
change
to,
the way they eat?
well,
Absolutely.
or even just to think about animals as creatures with feelings.
Absolutely. Every day. You know, if I wasn't, I wouldn't. If I wasn't doing that, I'd have hung up my boots a long time ago. But no, that's we do it every day. I hear stories all the time. People come to the sanctuary, you know, in person, meet these animals, and change. I get messages all the time that they watched a documentary and went vegan. They saw, you know, they read something. You know, it just happens all the time. I wish I could quantify it all, but you know, we got to get into rural communities. That's what we have to do.
Yeah, why is this cause important to you?
Well, it's important to me because as a former cattle rancher gone vegan and knowing what I know now, I realize that we've been lied to. You know, ranchers are not the enemy. You know, farmers are not the enemy. It's the system of violence. We live in a world that normalizes violence. And so it's important to me because I don't want to see generations in the future, you know, continuing to normalize so much horrible cruelty and to completely destroy our planet. We are destroying our planet in unbelievable measures. And it's important because I want to see our earth be rejuvenated. It needs to be rewilded. You know, everything is about systems. You know, we live in a world of systems, and we are currently in a system of violence. But that doesn't mean that we have to stay in this system. we need to create another system and make it so attractive that that becomes like a skin that we shed. You know, we want to have generations in the future looking back on this time period going, wow, look at what they used to do. They used to eat animals and be just shocked by it. You know, we've normalized suffering. It should not be. We should not be teaching children to eat babies. And that's what we do. You know, babies get baby food and there's little babies chopped up in there and babies are eating babies. And so why it's important to me is because we have a story that can cross through that barrier and get to those people, the cattle ranchers, the chicken farmers, the other farmers, that the ones that aren't the enemy, that can hear this and have an ethical awakening. That is my hope and my prayer, that farmers and ranchers will have an ethical awakening. Because if you have an ethical awakening, you will do whatever it takes to save those lives. You won't kill them anymore because they'll be just as important as your own cats and dogs and your children.
And how did things work out with your husband, Tommy?
Well, he's now the co-founder of Rowdy Girl. He went vegan on May 2nd of 2015. He started he went well he started eating a plant-based diet, you know. So his father died of a massive heart attack at the age of 62. And so my friend Jeannie had given me a lot of documentary titles to recommend to my husband. So I got them all, and Tommy, to his credit, you know, started watching them, like Cowspiracy and What the Health and Forks Over Knives, those kinds. And Forks Over Knives really resonated with my husband, Tommy, and he started thinking about his health and he started wanting to eat better because of that documentary. And so that's what started it for him. And then once he met Kip Anderson, he realized he needed to be more forward for the environment. He started realizing that. And now my husband is a full-blown ethical vegan.
Renee Kingsonen continues to advocate for the animals and for a vegan diet, and urges others who feel the same way to do more than change what they eat.
There are people that will hear you. You can't just sit in your room and just eat vegan food. You've got to be an activist for the animals and the planet and for people that are suffering because of animal agriculture.
That's all for now. Thanks to our guest, Renee Kingsonen, Executive Director and Founder of the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary and author of Rowdy Girl, Confessions of a Vegan Cattle Rancher. And thanks so much to you for listening. The Mothering Earth website is mothering-earth.com, where you can find this program and previous programs in our archives. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off. For Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.